In pursuit of a quote-unquote tobacco-free generation, Governor Kathy Hochul's budget proposal calls for a $1 per pack increase on cigarette taxes in New York and looks to expand upon existing flavored vaping restrictions by prohibiting the sale of all flavored tobacco products. To discuss these measures, as well as state investments in anti-smoking initiatives, we're joined on the Capitol Press Room by Blair Horner, Executive Director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, who, in another life, worked for the American Cancer Society. Welcome back to the studio, Blair.
Thank you for having me, and I'm glad that I'm around long enough to have had more than one life.
Well, you know, they say we get no second acts, but you're living proof of second and third acts. So let's start with the restrictions on flavored tobacco products. What is the flavored tobacco marketplace like now? What can I buy either in a combustible or, I guess, electronic format?
The FDA bans the sale of flavored cigarettes, so you can't do that.
Darn.
You under New York state law, you can't get flavored vapes, electronic versions.
Okay, so what's missing under those two restrictions?
Well, the other tobacco products. So you have little cigars, for example, which are essentially cigarettes, and cigars and snuff and, you know, chewing tobacco. I mean, there's different kinds of ways that you can go if you need to get a starter tobacco product.
So does that mean when I have my yearly trip to the Saratoga race course, I won't be able to swing by Stewart's and pick up one of these mini little cigars that purport to have some sort of flavoring, maybe grape, as I enjoy the races from the backyard of the historic Saratoga race course?
That is, if the governor has her way, that is true.
And why is that something that we want to stop? Why do you want to ruin my afternoon?
Personally, I always look to ruin your afternoon and morning, if that's possible. Certainly, the overwhelming majority of people who start smoking start with a flavored product. Mm-hmm. And it makes perfect sense why. You're inhaling smoke. And to the extent that you can sort of deaden the pain through sweets or menthol, which sort of can sort of numb the intake of the tobacco smoke, then you do it. And it's about 80% of the people who start smoking start with the flavored product. And so the strategy and the governor's thinking on this is you fill in this particular loophole on flavored tobacco products, and that way you can curtail young people from starting.
Don't we already have restrictions, though, on young people and their ability to smoke? We raised the age to 21.
Yes.
Why do we need to then ban products? Because we're not banning then young people from smoking these. We're banning Dave Lombardo, now 35.
You're that old.
I know. Well, we're not going to bring up how old you are, Blair.
Well, we don't have enough fingers and toes. You didn't bring your abacus to the interview.
I did not.
You know, in terms of the minimum age restriction doesn't work. I mean, virtually everybody.
But we had big press conferences here. Everyone was patting themselves on the back.
As you may recall, I was not one of those.
Touché.
And it's a sad commentary, but virtually everyone who starts before the age of 18, despite the fact that it's been illegal in New York for many years to purchase tobacco products under the age of 18. Virtually everyone who does starts then. And virtually no one starts as an adult. Now, you're right that this would mean that adults would not be able to get flavored tobacco products, but they're a relatively small portion of the market. And the biggest concern is articulated by the governor is you try to keep the young people from starting because they're not going to want to start just puffing away on a tobacco product without some sort of way to sort of, again, as I mentioned before, limit the pain. Mm-hmm. And so that's how the industry dies off if they can't get replacement smokers, because most people don't start, the vast majority of people don't start as adults, and those who are smoking as adults tend to have serious health problems and often early death.
What would this restriction mean for menthol cigarettes? Does menthol count as a flavor under the proposed budget language?
Yes.
And is that a big deal?
Well, menthol in particular is one that actually does a very good job of minimizing the pain when you start. The industry has aggressively targeted certain demographics, particularly African Americans.
Well, black smokers, I think 85% of them, based on some studies, use menthol cigarettes.
That's right. And they start that way, just like everyone else does as a young person. They get addicted. It's a powerfully addicting drug. Tobacco, nicotine is as addicting as heroin. And so once you get hooked, it's hard to stop.
So there's an argument that's made that by prohibiting something that's predominantly or disproportionately used by black smokers, you're going to drive those smokers to the unregulated market for so-called loosies, which puts them at risk of encountering the criminal justice system. So you want to avoid that. So don't ban menthol cigarettes. What do you think of that argument?
Well, the issue is really, as the governor articulated it, is how do you keep young people from starting? And that's that's where you start, if you start with that as your basis.
But there are adults who are already addicted to
cigarettes. So you've got to do everything you can to get them to stop. And I think that where the failure in the Hochul plan is really obvious is she doesn't spend any more money on tobacco control, which is the program that would help people to quit if you can do it. And she doesn't, as far as I can tell in the budget, again, we're still just plowing through it, do anything about boosting enforcement of the bootlegging mm-hmm. side of the whole issue. There are some states, California, Massachusetts, and New Jersey, that have sort of advanced-style tax stamps, which California has shown has had a dramatic reduction in bootleg in that state. Now, New York should do the same thing and should create, sort of a state police strike force to look into this and give them the resources to do a good job. I mean, if you can reduce the amount of illegal sales and you can reduce the amount of young people at start, you do a lot to reduce healthcare costs, save people's lives, and deal more appropriately with a dangerous industry, which this is a product that when used as directed addicts and kills.
Well, for listeners just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're speaking with New York Public Interest Research Group Executive Director Blair Horner, and we're breaking down some of the tobacco-free generation policies advanced by Governor Kathy Hochul in her state budget. You mentioned that the state appears to be holding the line on anti-smoking initiatives in the governor's budget. Does that represent a new phenomenon, this flat funding for these types of efforts, or have we seen this for a long period of time?
The Cuomo administration savaged the funding for this program. They cut the program by more than 50%.
Was that a reflection of just a loss of revenue? Is there just maybe not enough money to invest in this type of thing?
I can't speak for the governor, of course, the former governor, but they clearly did not think this was a priority. The spending on this program peaked under Governor Spitzer at about $85 million in a year. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention put out a sort of boilerplate what each state should do, and they give ranges. New York's 140 to 200 million. We've never come close to that, although Spitzer did a good job of boosting the funding. When Cuomo came in, again, to some extent probably reflecting the financial situation of the state at the time,
recession,
in 2011, but he never reinstalled it. The state raises a lot of money from smoking, about $1 billion in taxes mm-hmm. alone. And the state gets roughly another $1 billion from the state's involvement in a lawsuit against the tobacco companies that went down in late 1998. Every year, the state gets money from that. And the combination of the two of them is a lot of dough. And yet, the state spends far less than it should.
So then, how should we think about Governor Kathy Hochul's commitment to a so-called tobacco-free generation if she only wants to commit a tiny, tiny fraction of the revenue that we have both from cigarette sales as well as, like you said, that settlement funding? Is she disingenuous about it or what?
Well, I would say that she's got 30 days to fix this. She has 30 days to amend her budget. I think it's a mistake on the part of the Hochul administration not to put more money into the program, particularly if you're raising the tax a dollar. It's going to be that much more expensive for smokers to continue their deadly addiction. And so the state should do everything they can to help them to quit. And if you don't, that's a big mistake. And they should do more to deal with bootlegging, because that's a serious problem, too.
Well, you mentioned the increase in taxes with the state excise tax on cigarettes proposed to go from $4.35 to $5.35. And the state is projecting a loss in revenue due to this change, presumably because people will be deterred from smoking with the higher cost. Does that mean this is a smart policy option?
Well, I think it's a smart policy option if you couple it with other things, such as helping people who are currently going to have to be forced to pay the tax or quit, mm-hmm. And to do everything you can to deal with the bootlegging side of it, because that's the criminal element of this whole thing, and the state hasn't done enough, obviously. The loss in income, I mean, there's two ways to look at it, right? It's definitely a loss in income that the governor's projecting, but they have had big drops in income every year now for about ever since the 2010 tax went into effect. It was about $1.6 billion, and now it's just under $1 billion, according to Tax and Finance, and that's a $50 million drop from the previous year. So you could argue, I suppose, that the state is going to be getting more money to reduce the loss. That might be another way to look at it, although it's hard to follow that logic at a certain level. But nevertheless, they should spend more to do a better job of getting people who currently smoke to quit. That would be the best way to deal with everybody's sort of situation on this.
Is it fair to describe cigarette taxes as regressive in nature?
They are regressive in terms of the smokers. Mm-hmm. Now, again, no matter how you slice and dice the demographics, the vast majority of people don't smoke. But of smokers, you are much more likely to smoke as a lower income individual than you are as an upper income individual. That's generally the way it sort of plays out. It's an addictive drug, and people start at an early age. And it, you know, if people don't have the resources to quit, it's very hard to do it.
And do we need partnership with neighboring states or the Native American tribal lands operating in New York if we want to get serious on people going towards cheaper cigarette options, more flavorful cigarette options? Right. Or can we do this alone?
Well, you can't do it alone. You have to have some sort of cooperative agreements. And as I mentioned before, New Jersey, Massachusetts joined California in having sort of these advanced technology tax stamps. So that would be one way to do it. Yeah, I think you need to have sort of coordinated efforts, particularly in New York City and with New Jersey, mm-hmm. with regard to cheap cigarettes from the South moving their way up north. And in terms of the Native Americans, I mean, that's been a festering problem that goes back many, many years. It becomes a difficult issue to deal with because they are allowed under the existing law to be exempt from state policies. And so if people are willing to, drive out to get cheap cigarettes, they can do that. It's very hard, though, to imagine a 14-year-old hopping on their bicycle and riding to some Native American land. So the issue really is can you stop the bootleggers from bringing it from Native American merchants to the public at large? And that means you got to have serious law enforcement component to the whole thing.
Is it disingenuous for the governor and other policymakers to restrict access to tobacco products, flavored tobacco products in this case, while paving the way for recreational marijuana?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. The recreational marijuana issue is about how you're going to treat another widely available drug. I don't think the science is there to say it's as addicting as heroin, in terms of marijuana being as addicting as that. So it falls more sort of in the line of, how do you treat alcohol? I think that there is a difference, although inhaling smoke is not good no matter what you do. But whether or not it has the same lung damage as tobacco does, I think, is another question. Most people don't go around smoking packs of marijuana cigarettes every day. And so with tobacco, it's much more difficult because it is so addicting. People go through packs of cigarettes every day, and the impact on your lungs is much worse.
Well, we've been speaking with Blair Horner. He's the executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group. Blair, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Support for the Capitol Press Room provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. Visit unionstrongny.org for more information. Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.